Online services that let you manage your personal finances get a wake-up call from some big banks. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. You may know Mint. You sign up for this personal finance site, put in your bank, credit card, and loan account numbers, type in your passwords, and you can then track your money from a common dashboard. Now, the Wall Street Journal is reporting today that Bank of America briefly cut off its connections to Mint and other online services, such as parts of Quicken, out of concerns about data security and privacy. B of A isn't commenting, but the cutoff was reportedly for about 4 hours. The journal's story suggests Bank of America and other banks are also worried about this digital competition as these online services draw the attention of customers away. We do know banks have been expressing worry about their customers' data on other sites. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is here with more on that.
Most of the public statements from banks have been focused on privacy and security issues. Do these sites put customers' information at risk? Aggregators say no, that their sites are perfectly safe and secure. But at a Fortune event in San Francisco last month, J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon mentioned these third-party aggregators. He said he'd had his staff go through the user agreements on a bunch of sites, that all that fine print that most of us skip past, and he was concerned about how people's information might be used or shared. Of course, it would be interesting to plow through the user agreements for big banks' online services. On his own website, Chase warns customers against sharing their info with third-party sites. It says, if you give out your user ID and password, you could be responsible for money you might lose as a result. Other sites have similar warnings, and Wells Fargo told the Wall Street Journal that it added a new layer of security last month that might prevent financial aggregators from gathering customers' information.
All right, Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson, thank you. Let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is down 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down. The 10-year bond yield is up at 2.34%. That bond market is telling us that the professionals are expecting the Fed to raise interest rates next month for the first time since 2006. Companies are borrowing now at cheaper rates in anticipation. An outfit called Dealogic analyzes this sort of thing and crunched some numbers for the Financial Times that showed a jump in so-called jumbo deals, those worth $10 billion or more. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
So far this year, there have been 13 jumbo deals. That's more than four times as many as last year. Economist J.W. Mason of the City University of New York says that money isn't necessarily for growth.
It's not financing real investment. It's not financing factories. It's not financing research and development.
Mason says many companies are using the debt to pay for mergers and acquisitions or to pay better dividends.
From a shareholder's point of view, that's really just as good as the kind of earnings growth you would see in a more robust expansion.
So is what seems like a good strategy for companies a good plan for individuals? Anne Witte is a professor emerita at Wellesley College. She says sometimes.
It might make sense to lock in a good mortgage rate. But it doesn't make sense to take out loans for consumption unless you're very sure you're going to be able to pay off those loans.
Because even cheap money eventually has to be paid back. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
We're in the midst of the fall fine art auction season. Last night at Christie's, a painting of a nude reclining figure by Modigliani went for more than $170 million. One thing about the early 20th century artist Modigliani, it's not like he only painted a few pictures in his lifetime. He was prolific, and that might have been part of the high price last night. Here to explain is Blake Gopnik, critic at large for ArtNet News and a contributor to the New York Times. He's joining us from the archives of the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, where he's researching his new Warhol biography. Good morning, Blake.
Good morning, David.
So as this auction season proceeds here, it got you thinking about a kind of alternate economic universe for the market for fine art?
All the normal rules of everything get reversed in the art world, and the normal rules of economics seem to be reversed too. If you decrease supply, you increase demand, but that doesn't work in the art market. A very prominent auctioneer explained to me, collectors like to collect, and to collect, you have to be able to get a whole bunch of stuff together. They want to be able to buy 50, 100 works by their pet artist, and you can't do that with some of the most famous artists out there.
So if you have like five of a particular artist, not enough to drive up the price in many cases.
That's right. The market needs a whole bunch of collectors all fighting for the same thing. That's how auctions work, right? Last week, at Sotheby's, their impressionist and modern sale. A Van Gogh, right? An artist where there are very few works out there in the market. You'd think that that would mean the prices would be higher than anything else. Well, there was a lovely 1889 landscape that went for only, and the word only in the art world is a strange one, only $54 million.
So if somehow I could discover a whole bunch more works by that artist that are in circulation, maybe you think it would have been higher.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to not only discover them, but then convince a bunch of collectors that there's going to be more out there. You have to turn Van Gogh into a lively marketplace. Collectors want to have a lot of works by the artist, but they also want the fun of bidding competitively. And there just aren't enough Van Goghs that aren't in museums for that to happen. Whereas Pablo Picasso, who made unbelievable numbers, well, his market is huge. A Picasso from 1901 in the same auction went for almost $70 million, probably because people can collect Picassos because there's so much out there.
Blake Gopnik is critic at large for artnetnews.com. He's also working on his forthcoming, but he won't say when, Warhol biography. Blake, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Paige Jong. From studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey today, as our New York Bureau gets fixed up, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. APM, American Public Media.